A few dogs and William. William picked up the large greyish object and examined it carefully. A mushroom, he announced. The other outlaws looked at it doubtfully.
Bet it's a toadstool, said Ginger. There's been people killed eating them, thinking they were mushrooms.
Well, I bet this is a mushroom, persisted William. I'm going to take it home and ask them to cook it. I'll give it to my mother for a present. It's her birthday next week.
A mushroom won't count, said Douglas. Not for a birthday. They don't.
I bet it's a toadstool, said Ginger again. I can tell by the colour. A mushroom's sort of white.
Well, this is sort of white, said William.
Go on, then, said Ginger. Eat it and see if you die.
No, I don't like 'em raw, said William. I'm going to get it cooked.
They'll just throw it in the dustbin and tell you not to come bothering 'em, said Henry.
This sounded so probable that William did not contradict it.
I'll cook it myself, then, he said.
You'll die if it's a toadstool, Ginger warned him again.
William smelled it and licked it tentatively.
No, it's a mushroom, all right.
But he spoke less certainly. They were passing Miss Tressida's house. Little Miss Tressida owned an elderly, cantankerous, short-sighted brown dog called Nero, who now stood at her gate and growled softly at the outlaws as they passed, more on general principles than because he had anything against them. William stopped. He liked to be on friendly terms with the canine population of the village.
"Hi, boy," he said, in a conciliatory tone.
Nero growled again. William held out the hand that contained the dubious mushroom. Nero advanced, smelt the offering, and suddenly, before any of them could stop him, swallowed it.
"Gosh," said William, dismayed. "Crumbs," said Ginger. "I jolly well hope it wasn't a toadstool."
"Come away, quick," said Douglas apprehensively, "for she sees us. She'll say it's our fault if it dies. She'll kick up an awful fuss."
William was thoughtful during lunch, refusing a third helping of pudding out of sheer absent-mindedness. It was at tea time that the bomb fell.
"I met Miss Tressida in the village," said Ethel carelessly. "The poor old thing was in such a state. That dog of hers is dead."
William swallowed half a bun.
What? He stammered. "I wasn't talking to you," said Ethel.
William stared at her.
It was a toadstool after all.
Evidently no one yet connected him with the death of the dog. That, at any rate, was a relief, but not much of one.
He'd held out a toadstool as if it were an appetizing dainty, and Nero, trusting him blindly, had eaten it.
The brand of Cain seemed to descend on William. He rose from the table with a muttered excuse.
"Oh, don't you want any more tea, William?" said his mother.
"No, thanks," said William.
"Have you a headache, dear?"
William laughed harshly.
Fancy asking someone if they'd a headache when they'd just murdered a dog.
He went out into the hall. The next step was obvious. He must get Miss Tressida another dog. He had just sixpence halfpenny. He didn't know much about the price of dogs, but he thought that you ought to be able to get quite a good one for sixpence halfpenny. Sixpence halfpenny was, after all, a pretty large sum of money, and it was indeed an unusual chance that he possessed it. The sixpence had been given him by an aunt who'd been to tea yesterday and had been so agreeably surprised to find him out that, in a moment of expansive relief, she'd left sixpence for him with his mother. He'd meant to buy a pistol with the money, but that would have to wait now. Next morning, he walked all the way into Hadley to the pet shop. A small, stout, supercilious-looking man, rather like a Pekingese, came forward.
"Yes, can I help you?"
I want a big brown sort of dog, please," said William.
The man winced slightly at the "sort of."
"We only keep pedigree dogs here."
Well, yes, that's the sort I meant.
The man winced again. This small, grubby boy didn't look like the potential purchaser of a pedigree dog, but one couldn't be certain of anything with the modern child. The man led the way to the back of the shop and opened a large kennel. William's heart leapt. The brown dog inside was the very double of Miss Tressida's late Nero.
How much is it?" he said casually, fingering his two coins affectionately, and hoping it wouldn't be quite sixpence halfpenny.
£10,
said the man. With a tremendous effort, William concealed his emotion.
He's not quite the sort I want. What other sorts have you got?
The man displayed the remainder of his wares. The prices soared up to £20 and £30.
There's nothing here that I want. Thanks very much. Q. Good afternoon.
He walked down the street, then stopped and stood silent, staring at the passing traffic. There must be another way, if only he could think of it. And then it came to him. What about Miss Mortimer's Hereward? He looked exactly like Nero. And Miss Mortimer had 3 dogs, while Miss Tressida now had none. If he took Hereward and tied him up in Nero's empty kennel, Miss Mortimer would still have 2 dogs, which was enough for anyone. He made his way quickly to Miss Mortimer's house, where luck was with him. Hereward stood just inside the gate, looking bored and friendly, and no one else was about. Hereward responded readily to William's overtures of friendship and followed him willingly, wagging his tail. William led him along the lane and round to the back of Miss Tressida's house, fastened him to a chain by Nero's kennel, and set off again. Hereward, however, was feeling betrayed. He'd been looking forward to an adventure with William, but now found himself chained up beside a strange kennel. He lifted up his head and howled desolately. Miss Tressida, drawn by the eerie sound, came to the window and stared out. She blenched. She'd been sorrowing for poor dear Nero and had just said to herself, if only he would come back to me for 1 hour. And there he was, even though she'd seen him buried with her own eyes just yesterday. He'd never howled like that in his lifetime, of course, but clearly he'd come back to her with a message. She opened the window.
Nero, she said. What is it? Nero!
Hereward continued to howl. And then Miss Tressida thought of Miss Bullamore. Miss Bullamore had a handbook on palmistry and did fortune-telling at the local fetes. She was generally thought to be psychic. Perhaps she'd be able to interpret Nero's howls. Little Miss Tressida flung on her hat and got out her bicycle. Miss Bullamore was interested, but slightly bemused, for Miss Mortimer had just paid her a visit in deep distress because her Hereward had disappeared. She had begged Miss Bullamore to use her psychic powers to discover where he was. But in spite of her handbook on palmistry, Miss Bullamore's psychic powers were somewhat uncertain. They tended to work best after the event. When something had happened, Miss Bullamore often impressed her friends by saying that she'd had a feeling that it was going to. She was somewhat disconcerted by Miss Tressida's request. She'd never had any dealings with spirit dogs before. But then she thought no one would be able to prove that her interpretations of Nero's howls didn't mean whatever she said they meant. And that was the main thing. So she agreed to cycle back with Miss Tressida. Meanwhile, William, on his way to the old barn, had been pursued by those raucous, desolate howls. He stopped. He couldn't possibly give Miss Tressida a dog that howled like that. He wouldn't mind a howling dog himself. In fact, he'd rather like one. But experience had taught him that elderly maiden ladies have peculiar ideas about noise. He was just passing Mr. Cornish's house. Mr. Cornish had a bull terrier called Oberon, a nice, quiet dog, an old dog with a weak chest. William had often heard Mr. Cornish say it was more trouble to him than it was worth. Miss Tressida wouldn't mind its weak chest. She was always getting colds herself, and it could share her medicines. Oberon, large, whitish-pink and ungainly, sat by his kennel. He squirmed ecstatically when he saw William and made a clumsy leap in his direction. One of Oberon's delusions was that he was still a puppy. William unfastened his chain, and Oberon lumbered after him, wheezing joyfully, seeing himself as a puppy out with a boy, making elephantine runs and rushes at nothing in particular. It was the work of a few seconds for William to undo Hereward, still filling the air with his lamentations, and fasten Oberon to the chain instead. Hereward vanished down the road like a streak of lightning. Oberon sat down heavily. He seemed happy, and anyway he couldn't howl because he wheezed so much he could hardly even bark. William felt he'd spent quite enough time on this whole business, and set off once more towards the old barn. Miss Tressider sat down weakly on a chair near her back door.
"He's stopped howling," she said to Miss Bullimore. "Do see if he's still there, dear. I don't really know if he's visible to anyone else, but of course you'll be able to see him, because you're psychic."
Miss Bullimore put on her psychic look and went to the window.
"Oh, yes, I can see him," she said triumphantly. "Yes, I can see him."
Perhaps she really was psychic.
"What's he doing, dear?"
"Sitting. Just sitting. Just a white dog sitting."
"White?"
shrilled Miss Tressider.
"White? Has he gone white? Oh!"
She dropped her face in her hands.
"Oh, well, of course he would be. Oh, my poor Nero. I can't bear to look. Is he fading away?"
"No, dear, he doesn't seem to be fading away."
At that moment, Miss Mortimer arrived at the front door. She was angry and breathless. She'd been told that her Hereward was in Miss Tressider's back garden. She demanded to see the dog that was tied up to Miss Tressider's kennel.
"Oh, I'm afraid you won't actually be able to see him, dear," said Miss Tressider sadly.
The three of them gazed through the window at the plump, solid figure of Oberon, who looked up and wheezed at them in greeting and thumped his tail on the ground.
But it's not Nero,"
gasped Miss Tressider.
"Well, it's certainly not Hereward," said Miss Mortimer. "Let's go out to him," said Miss Bullimore,
who was feeling relieved that she hadn't risked her psychic reputation by interpreting Nero's message. Just as Miss Tressider opened the back door, Mr. Cornish arrived. Mr. Cornish was as small and peppery as Oberon was large and placid, and was intensely annoyed to have been informed that Oberon had been seen chained up in Miss Tressider's garden. Mr. Cornish had never liked Miss Tressider, not since she forced him to buy an expensive cushion he didn't want at the church bazaar last summer. But he wasn't going to put up with this. Clearly a woman who'd behaved like that over a cushion was capable of anything. "Now look, you'll hear of this again," began Mr. Cornish. "You'll hear of this."
Meanwhile, William's conscience was still troubling him. He oughtn't to have left a white dog in place of Nero. Besides, it wasn't fair to give Miss Tressider an old dog like Oberon. It should have been a young dog, and a brown one. He knew that Farmer Jenks had a young, scatterbrained brown collie called Victoria, whom he'd heard the farmer say he was despairing of ever training as a sheepdog. So it would be a kindness to Farmer Jenks to relieve him of her. William approached the farmyard and hung over the gate. Yes, there was Victoria, trying to fraternise with a broody hen. William whistled. Victoria cocked her ears. She was bored with the hen and decided to accompany this friendly boy wherever he wanted to take her. She frisked round him happily as he made his way, once more, to Miss Tressider's house. William walked boldly round to the back of the house, then stopped. The small lawn seemed full of people.
"You'll hear of this again, Miss Tressider," Mr. Cornish was saying. "You'll hear of this."
It is probable that, alone, Victoria and Oberon would not have fought. It is probable that if Hereward and William's own beloved Jumble had not arrived simultaneously at that moment, the end would have been happy and peaceful for everyone except, perhaps, William. Hereward had been annoyed on arriving home to find his mistress not there. He had tracked her to the scene of his recent humiliation. There was a fat white dog there who was probably the cause of the whole trouble, so he flung himself savagely at it. Victoria joined in furiously, and Jumble, disliking all of them impartially, leapt joyfully into the heart of the fray. William withdrew slightly and found Miss Tressider's housemaid standing beside him.
"Oh, poor old thing," she said. "She is having a time of it, and no mistake. That there Nero run over yesterday morning."
"What?" said William.
"Oh, haven't you heard?" said the housemaid. "A great big van it was. Flattened him out, poor old thing. Driver blew his horn like mad, but Nero, he was that deaf. Oh, poor old thing."
William stared at her blankly. So, Nero's death had had nothing to do with the mushroom. He was sorry for Nero, of course, but, well, he'd taken all this trouble for nothing. Well, he'd wasted enough time. Thank goodness he'd still got his sixpence halfpenny. He'd go and buy that pistol right now before anything else happened. It was no use calling Jumble. Jumble never left a fight till there was no one left to fight with. William walked cheerfully away, his hands in his pockets, quite unmoved by the nightmare sounds of barking, growling, screaming and shouting that were growing to a climax in Miss Tressida's garden. It was, after all, nothing to do with him.